be taken.
There we go.
So that being said, your quorum is meeting in order this time. With a quorum. And,
Oh, very good.
In attendance is Councilman Smalley. I just wrote these down as he came in. Myself, Street, Reiner, Councilman, President Kovac, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilwoman Diller, and Councilman Bell. Mr. Hollins is not going to be able to make it, and Councilman Smalley said he might have to leave around 2 o'clock. So if he gets up, we know why. With no further ado, do we have a motion for the adoption in a minute?
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Second.
Motion made, second. A question on the minutes. If none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. All right, today we have one presentation, which is a big one, our sewer system, the maintenance and so forth, and the operations, and the capacity and control. So we'll turn this over to Special Services, and Tony Schiavi standing up, and he'll announce his name, and we'll go from there.
Good afternoon, everyone. For the records, I'm Tony Schiavi from the Special Services Department, and we're here today.
Cindy's the singer, and he's the president of the board of Camelot Theater, and they're reacting to music theater arts.
We're here to give you an update on our CMOM enhancement programs. If any of this sounds familiar to you, it's because it was first introduced to you in September of 2008. We gave you an update later the following year, I think maybe in March 2009, and we gave you an update last year in April. So it's that time again that we're going to give you another update. And all those enhancement programs that you voted for in 2008 to help us comply with our latest regulatory order that was issued to us in October of 2008. Just to refresh your memory, the original order was put into effect in October of 2003. It basically required us to develop a spill elimination plan for the Delaware River with a schedule of improvements to Brandywine 100 sewers. It required us to spend $9 million in that sector. And the $9 million was to be spent between the years of 2002 and 2005. And additionally, as part of that order, we were supposed to update our emergency response to our sewer system spills. And we were also supposed to implement a fat spools and grease program. That's a program where we try to work with the community and the commercial establishments to eliminate the removal of grease, which can cling on to sewers like cholesterol on the arteries and make it difficult for things to flow through.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, Mr. Warner?
Yes. How was the $100,000 fine used? Did anyone recall?
The $100,000, that wasn't part of the 2003 order. That was part of the 2008 order.
Right.
That was a penalty.
Right, and how was it used?
I don't know. We had to pay that to Denrent.
By Denrent.
I'm not sure how that was.
Was that the money that was used on Fox Point Park?
No. That was
They took it.
They just took it. Okay.
And before you go on, I just want to announce Councilman Cartier and Councilman Redditt is in attendance.
Okay. So we got this order in 2003, and it required us to do all these things, and we did those things. We came up with a elimination plan for Brandywine 100. That was approved in December of 2004. Instead of spending just $9 million on sewers between 2002 and 2005, we spent $22 million. And Denrec did review and approve our revised emergency response plan for sanitary sewer overflows. And they also approved our fat soils and grease program. So around 2005, we thought we were doing pretty good. We had the order, we did everything that was required to do to meet that requirement, and even then some. Then a funny thing happened in April 2006. I was walking in the hall one day, and another engineer in the department said, "There's some EPA officials here to talk to us about our stormwater programs, and they'd like to ask you a few questions." So I go in the room, and they proceeded to ask me questions not about our storm system, but our sanitary sewer system. And that started a whole new process of regulatory involvement with Newcastle County, and it would eventually lead to an amended secretary's order in October of 2008. And in that order, they gave us a deadline to eliminate outfalls into the Delaware River caused by the Brain 100 sewers, and that deadline is December 31st, 2008. Hit us with a penalty, $100,000 fine. That's just a flat-out fee that we paid Denrec. And then it required us to have a capacity management and operations maintenance program, a CMOP program. And that's what we're here to talk about today. Some of the enhancements that we did today to get that program going. The CMOM requirement is not an unusual requirement for sewer service providers that are in a regulatory environment. We're in EPA Region 3, and it's required in most enforcement actions, so it's not something unusual. What is a CMOM program? Well, it really is a program that forces us to have a comprehensive sewer management program. Comprehensive in the sense that it's got to be multifaceted and it's got to cover a lot of bases. We got a heads up. We knew that when this amended secretary's orders would take place in October, we would have 60 days to do a CMOM program, but we got a good jump on it. We started our program in the fall of 2007, and it took us a year to do it. One individual kind of took the lead in doing the research and compiling all the information, and as you might guess, I was the individual that drew the short straw, so that was me. But in order to make sure that our program would be accepted, we hired a consultant from a national firm who kind of coached us. And he read, we did the heavy lifting, but he looked at it, tweaked it, so that we would get approval from Denrec. So with all that work in advance, we submitted our CMOM about a week or two before the December deadline. So we met with that requirement. So, with the new CMOM program in place, we knew that there was a lot of areas that needed to be enhanced, so to speak, to have a good, well-rounded CMOM program. And before our CMOM document was even submitted, and before the amended order was even put into effect in October, we approached County Council in September to help fund some of these enhancements, and council responded and did that and put us in good shape to comply with our amended secretary's order, which would be again put in effect in October 2008. And here's the programs that we're going to be talking about today. There's enhanced programs, a trunk line preventative maintenance program. Rob Roth is going to talk about that. Rob heads our sewer maintenance section. Rob's going to also talk about the chemical root control program and our closed circuit television systems investigation program. That's where we TV all our sewers and get a good feel for what their condition is. We send TV cameras through the pipes. The fat soils and grease program is going to be discussed by me. It's normally discussed by Mike Harris, who leads the program, but Mike has had a death in the family, so I'm going to pinch it for him. And the corrosion control program is going to be discussed by Regis Shursich, who heads our plant operations section. So with that, I will turn it over to Rob.
Councilman Cartier before you sit down, Tony, in case.
We're going through a another series of community sewer meetings up in the Brandywine 100. And, you know, I always stress to the public assembled there that, in fact, you know, county council has moved aggressively to fund all these programs. And when people have a question about why, you know, our sewer rates go up and so forth, it has to do with complying with these EPA mandates. And, you know, I just want to go on the record that, you know, the failure to comply, the failure to come up with these programs like CMOM, you know, doesn't sit well with the Environmental Protection Agency. And, you know, we could be in the line for, you know, we paid a $150,000 fine. Well, there are other jurisdictions I'll ask the, you know, the engineers in charge here, you know, confirm that, you know, these jurisdictions that don't step and address these issues, you know, really get hammered. You know, folks, you know, sewer bills went up a few dollars, but, you know, we're complying with EPA mandates. And I just want Tony to confirm that, you know, once again. Well, I mean, we've talked about that, but confirm that on the record.
Yeah. The Brandywine 100 program is one of the main objectives of the amended order. This is the other component of that. I believe we're going to get an update on the Brandywine 100 in 2 weeks from now. So you'll get that update. But you're correct. A lot of the major cities in Region 3 have been hit hard with fines. Baltimore.
$2 billion.
Yes. Hampton Roads in Virginia. Washington, D.C. has been hit. I don't know about New York City. I'm sure they've had. But once you get out of that top tier, you go down to a second tier, and that's where we fall. We've got a population of about 550,000, so we're not as big as them. We're the next, we're the big dog in the state. Philadelphia's been. So we've been working closely with DENREC. And although we've had regulatory actions against us, because we have shown, I guess, a desire to work with them, and we put these resources, we've approved them in December of 2008, you've approached us, or we approached you, and you funded these resources, that all puts us in a favorable light, and they will, there's always going to be that regulatory threat, but it'll be less severe if they know you're trying to work on the problem. And our CMOM document, it's probably about that thick, with two appendices that are about that thick or more. It's a very long document. It's very comprehensive. And both DENREC and the EPA have a copy of it. So I think it reflects the fact that we take managing our sewer system seriously. And I think it puts us in a good position. It's a good insurance policy. We still could, I mean, I also seem to think that the federal government is taking a step back in recent years because of the economy. We're not coming down too hard on this. But as soon as the economy bounces back, they'll be back on track keeping an eye on things.
General Manager, Wayne.
Wayne Merritt, Special Services. Just to comment, and I wish I'd brought it with me, but I had printed out about 8 of the most recent fines. I think it was out in the St. Louis area. It was like a $4.2 billion fine plus, and the fine was a smaller part. It was $100 million, but it was mandated programs they had to institute. So being fined a couple hundred thousand dollars on top of the programs in some of these larger jurisdictions is not out of the question.
Mr. Chairman, John. Just one last point I want to make also when I'm meeting the public in this round. We've got a great window of opportunity to do this because the municipal bond rates are very low, and the fact that we're a AAA rated county means we are taking advantage of extremely low interest rate bonds, I think in the neighborhood of 2.5%, to do a lot of this work. So you also have the factor where, you know, the contractors are sort of, you know, hungry for work, So those prices are down. So this is a great time to push aggressively ahead and buy this sewer renewal infrastructure to put in place things like the CMOM, because we're never going to get a better environment in terms of, you know, borrowing money to invest than the one we're in now. Everybody knows that at some point interest rates are going to turn around and head back up. So I just bring that to the forefront with the public every time I get a chance to meet. The actions of this council being critical to, you know, taking advantage of the environment we're in and preventing otherwise onerous and difficult fines from the EPA.
Councilman Street?
I don't understand any of this. And the reason I don't understand it is because it just doesn't make common sense to me. We, as a government and the owners of the sewer lines, are held responsible for all these things, and DNREC wants to impose this, that, and the other. EPA wants to impose this, that, and the other on us. Well, they know who is dumping the fat, the oils, and da-da-da-da. They know exactly who the major industries are and who's doing the most polluting. So why aren't they bothering them as opposed to just picking on the government? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Any questions or any answers? Or?
Well, I can't answer that, but just another comment. Just a piece of kingdom in my mind. Pittsburgh's been hit. Cincinnati's been hit. Cleveland's been hit. Anne Arundel County's been hit. You know, they've all had regulatory actions against them with pretty stiff penalties and commitments to improve their infrastructure. The city of Baltimore is like in $1 billion.
I want to let Councilman Tackett has joined us. And I have a question. Do we have the authority to know if we know, because we're the first ones to know that fats, greases, we've said this, the homeowners, do we have the authority to go to a plant, an industry, knowing they are throwing, I'm just going to say oil, motor oil down the stuff? Do we have the regulatory body? Are we allowed to do that? Does it fine them?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Robert, Special Services. I think it's easier to regulate a like a commercial food establishment because you can sample and find out who the violators are, and you can go after them. I think where it becomes difficult is in like a neighborhood setting. There's no easy way to tell what house or what structure is discharging fats, oils, and grease into the system. And just by nature, the grease is it migrates to the system. So if it's being dumped in here,
there,
it could be,
it goes,
you know,
down
2 miles downstream where it collects and causes a problem. So I think Newcastle County samples and enforces commercial establishments. It's the residential realm that's hard to enforce.
What about the industry? The industry environment.
Like we have industrial pre-treatment permits that most of our industry customers have to follow.
Okay.
Or they do follow.
Councilwoman Kopacz.
Do we have a program by which we notify residential customers about grease, fat, and oils? I don't ever remember going to anything where anybody talked about what comes out of neighborhoods. I don't know, I mean, until he mentioned it today, I don't know how much I even think about that. You know, you fry something in your frying pan, you've got a garbage disposal, and you just dump it all down the garbage disposal. Is that part of the problem? That everybody in the neighborhood does it?
You don't want to say that.
But you know, education and awareness might go somewhere with this, even if among us we talked about it at civic association meetings. Because I think we probably get, we either don't have the knowledge or we get very complacent because we have so many means of disposal that are so clean rather than throwing them in a garbage can.
William Mary, Special Services. As part of our CMOM program, we do go out and have public meetings. I think if you go in the county channel, you'll see a little cartoon character that talks about this very issue. if we see an apartment complex or an area or a community that's having a real problem, we'll go to that complex owner. We have door hangers. We've got little containers.
You haven't seen those? I'm surprised.
No.
We'll do a presentation.
My interim must be clean. I must be the only one dumping stuff.
I think some of that material will be covered under the fall.
There's some slides.
I think there's some slides under the Fats, Oil, and Green section that talk about that.
You must have missed the Pike Creek when I started talking about it, and they said, we don't want to hear about that stuff. What's going on with the bowling alley?
Yeah.
So I could bring it up to the civic umbrella groups. Mr. Retta?
Thank you. I don't know who can answer this. Maybe Rob can. I don't know. In the same line that Councilwoman was talking about the homes, what about the apartment complexes that are... that are actually commercial. Do they have grease pits on them, like a restaurant does?
Not all of them.
Is there any reason why we can't mandate that to have when these new apartment buildings would get built, or they have a problem in an apartment building that they have to put one in? The reason why I say that is because you got X amount of residents in there, and it's just like the councilwoman was saying, homeowners dump it in. They do the same, probably worse. And it goes down into our sanitary sewers. I mean, is there any reason why we can't regulate that, have grease pits put in?
I wouldn't want to speak for Mike Harris. I think he would be better to answer that specific question, but I can tell you that it's easier for us to regulate apartment complexes because they're individually owned as one entity.
Right.
And when we go in and investigate them with our TV camera, the evidence is clear. Typically, apartment complexes are bad offenders for grease.
Right.
And we present them with the proof, like Mr. Merritt was saying, and we have had enforcement actions on complexes before and work with them to clean up their grease problems.
Jeremy Skip, Special Services. We've had situations with commercial establishments that were dumping all kinds of things in the sewer system. We would go out into the manhole before it gets into the county system, put in a grate, and have them require them to maintain. So we have done steps similar. As far as going to that extent for apartment complex, we look into it.
And, you know, it's like you said, Rob, you don't know what happens where it gets dumped here. It's down 2 miles downstream. And it's the same with the apartment complex. They go into the same sanitary sewer that a housing complex does, where it might be downstream before we catch it. And the only reason why I say that now is, you know, is it comes to light about we think, you know, with new apartments coming out, and a lot of the old ones are going to be rehabbing because of the situation with the sales of the homes and all. I mean, they're getting filled up.
Well, we can definitely look into what other municipalities have done along that line of requiring grease traps on apartments.
I just think it would help us in the long run, save us a couple bucks.
Councilman Tackett and Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rob, I got to say first, you clean up very well. Last time I seen you, you were in the field, you had work boots on, the vest, and jeans. do we have any mechanism we put into place if we know? I mean, I don't know. I think it was about 2 years ago I had a situation, Timmy will be in here, but it was a restaurant on the corner of Harmony and 7, and you guys had got back to me and said you thought they had dumped a bunch of grease in, and it migrated down into my community, Rutherford, caused a blockage, and then flooded a house. Do you have any ability like to monitor a restaurant or something like that you believe to be an offender, kind of put some kind of a system on? Or
essentially, in a case like you're describing, that would trigger an investigation of two things, really. Can we trace back where the grease originated from, and can we prevent another blockage at the location where it decided to settle? So we have the ability to do both. So our goal would be to eliminate the source eventually through whatever means, through inspection and enforcement, and then secondly, we would address the specific location where the grease settled, whether if it was, you know, 2 miles downstream, we would put that location on a special cleaning cycle or some other, either using a chemical degreaser for grease to keep it from blocking again and impacting the home. So, yeah, we do have the ability. If we can trace back where the grease is coming from, we can go after the bug.
But you don't have some kind of a system or something you could actually place on that business somehow because you...
Typically, a commercial food establishment would have some type of grease trap. So we could... Mike Harris is not here today. He would have the ability. He has inspectors that can make sure the grease trap is being pumped and cleaned on a regular basis, that they're not bypassing the grease trap in some way. And there's been cases that they have caught businesses doing both of those things.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm hearing, you know, we have some repeat offenders. We've got apartments, we got businesses, we got commercial, as Councilman Street said. And we go after them. How do we go after them? Are they fined by the county? And what's our history been on that? I mean, because when you hear what the government, what the federal government, state government, through EPA is doing to us, what type of regulatory type findings are we placing on these businesses and folks to assure that they're not going to continue to violate?
I know we have fined businesses before for grease violations. Mike Harris would be able to give you more detail. But also, we try to encourage them to change their practice in some way. Like an example would be an apartment complex that we fined for grease. And the owner of the complex came to us and said, well, I don't want to be continually fined. Is there something I can do? We said either, you know, rip out all the garbage disposals out of all your apartments would be one thing. He didn't want to do that. Or he could start his own bacteria program where his maintenance men would introduce grease-eating bacteria into the system within the buildings themselves to correct the grease problem. And that's exactly what they did. So we were able to eliminate that apartment complex altogether without additional fines.
So I guess what are the fines? To what magnitude? You know, we go out to a homeowner, we slap one an instant ticket. Okay. What do we do on protecting our sewer system? What type of fine system is in place? How does it all work? I'm looking to be educated on, you know, how do we get in their minds and what do we do to folks? I'm not looking at residents. I'm looking at folks that know that it's happened and we've cited them before. What do we do?
In the one instance that I was involved in, they had a base fine of $1,000, I believe, plus Newcastle County's costs to correct the grease issue, which there were multiple times where we had to go out and clean the sewer and clean up the sewer overflow. So it was a base fine plus our costs. And then, you know, as I said, the business owner developed a program to change the situation out there where he wouldn't incur those costs. So I think with each violation, there's a base violation that's a fine plus the costs that are associated with it, the cost of Newcastle County.
So there's a regular schedule of fines?
Yes.
For?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else? Mr. Weiner has a unfortunate incident with his best friend, passed away, has to leave the meeting, and then noted. Okay.
As Tony Schiavi mentioned earlier, we're going to give you an update on the programs that were required by CMOM to reduce SSOs in the county. We've been here before, we've given you other updates. I'm going to go through each one of them and give you the details of what each program consists of and our recent activities with the program. Trunkline preventative maintenance, chemical root control program, CCTV investigation program, and fat, soil, and grease. All these programs are designed to lower SSOs. I'm happy to report since 2008 we've dropped 52% overall for our sanitary sewer overflows as a result of these programs. The trunk line program, what is a trunk line? Simply put, it's in any sanitary sewer pipe that's 10 inches or larger. Trunk lines convey sewage from the smaller subdivision collector sewers, which are usually 8 inches or smaller. They convey the sewage to larger pipes and ultimately pump stations and wastewater treatment plants. In the county, we have approximately 225 miles of trunk lines. The Trunk Line PM program, the objectives set out by CMOM, are to target smaller trunk lines. We have sewers that are 72 inches in diameter. We tend to stay away from the larger diameter sewers and target the smaller ones in the 15 to 24 inch to 36 inch range. We target parallel sewers or release sewers. We have areas in the county where we have a trunk line that was built originally and then replaced with a parallel pipe. What we're interested in is the older pipe, what kind of condition it's in, what problems it may have. And we target historical trouble spots, areas that have seen collapses, SSOs, mainline stoppages, etc., or lines that have never been inspected with a TV camera before since they've been built. We target those areas. So the objectives are to maintain or reclaim capacity of the pipes by removing debris, roots, grease, fixing structural problems, line collapses, fixing sinkholes that let soil infiltrate into the trunk line. These are a couple of screenshots of more recent trunk line jobs. You can see a hole in the side of this trunk line with groundwater pouring in. That groundwater is taking up existing capacity of that trunk line and also risking a complete collapse. So that was repaired. This is a deformed PVC pipe. That pipe is taking up existing capacity and also threatening a blockage if a larger piece of debris would come down and lodge on that. We could fix that. Also, we reclaim legal and physical access to our manholes and sewer lines. This is a picture of a manhole that's been paved over. So we had to dig that back up and reset the frame and cover so we can have access to that manhole.
Councilman Loretta.
Rob, in that, do we charge the contractors that did it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
For fiscal year 2012, we focused, these are the primary jobs, we've done other jobs, but focused up in Pike Creek. A lot of the outfalls of the neighborhoods in Pike Creek go through the woods and through golf courses and follow streams and never been TV'd since they were built. So we did about 66,000 feet or 67,000 feet. The Pike Creek trunk line itself, we did about 23,000 feet. And Lower Leatherman's Run, that's the trunk line that goes from north of the 95 Service Plaza down the old Baltimore Pike. We completed that job. So this is typically of some of the trouble things that you would find, complete collapses and partial collapse. So we would want to fix this right away. And we would want to put this on a list to get fixed in the very near future.
Councilman Cordier?
When I look at this, it almost looks like there was an earthquake. I mean, what do you attribute this to? Is it bad backfilling when they lay the initial run of pipe in there, or?
Could be. Could be back. I mean, standards over time have changed. You know, we have construction standards now that are completely different than what we had 6 years ago, or 60 years ago, excuse me. So it could be bad backfill. It could be a hairline crack that was in the pipe the day it was laid. It could be roots that have gotten into the pipe and caused the pipe to shatter. So any number of issues would cause a problem like that.
What's the age of this we're looking at?
Most likely 60 years, 50 years.
Oh, this is up in the Brandywine 100 area? Or?
This is screen captures from somewhere in the county. This is all Newcastle County. So with the older clay pipe tends to have more fracturing issues than new clay pipe. Chemical root control program, how do roots form? Roots make their way into the sewer system through open pipe joints. And the roots can come into the joint as thin as a human hair and start to grow. The tree roots are going after nutrient-rich sewer flow, and they form root nets, that's a picture of a root net, and then eventually form root balls. And as the roots get thicker and thicker, they'll eventually shatter the pipe, and they can grow as big as a taproot can be several inches in diameter. So, why use chemical root control? We used to treat roots by physically, mechanically cutting them out of the sewer. Our service crews would go out each year into a neighborhood and cut the roots out of the sewer. And just like pruning a bush in your yard, once you cut the roots, it encourages them to grow in thicker and more robust. So chemical root control is a herbicide, a contact herbicide, so it only kills what it touches. So it'll kill all the roots in the pipe and just outside of the pipe, and it's effective for 3 years. So you foam the pipe up with the chemical root control, and then it'll keep the roots at bay for 3 years, and then you retreat as needed. The application of the root control can be done in a pipe that's not clean, so we don't need the tractor cleaning crews to apply chemical root control, so that's a plus. And all the crews that used to cut roots every 6 months to a year, we can redeploy them in different areas and clean additional miles of sewer, freeing up, for more preventative maintenance coverage.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Environmental friendly?
Yes.
Okay, as far as the type of chemicals we're using.
And non-carcinogen.
Very good.
This is a, CMOM requirement. In 2006, when the program first got started, we started it a little bit before that, but in 2006, we treated 175,000 feet, and in 2011, we treated just shy of 369,000. And it has lowered our SSO since 2008, 68%. So it's very effective. In the areas that we treat, it's 99% effective. We rarely go back to retreat before the 3 years is up. And that's a picture of a foam sewer line man. The CCTV system investigation program, we use that to follow up any SSO or mainline stoppage. So anytime we have a problem in our system, it triggers a TV investigation to find the root cause. So that would include stoppage from fats, oils, and grease, or a root stoppage, or sometimes we don't know what caused the stoppage, and that's what the TV investigation reveals. Another part of the program is CCTV quality assurance program. We have in-house cleaning crews, and we clean up to 500 miles a year. We randomly select sections that have just been cleaned, and we'll go in and TV that line, and we'll assess the quality of our crew's cleaning. We use it as a tool to show what we're doing right, show what we can do a little bit better, but it's been very effective. We do additional condition assessment for as needed in areas that have never been TV'd, or we show a trend of problems. We'll use this program to do additional investigation. Additional objectives are older parts of the system. Parts of the system that have had a history of SSOs. They may not even be current problems, but in the past. And it supplements the root control and trunk line and follow programs as needed. And I think every time I've updated council, I've always said that we see a spike in repairs of the system, because it's like that movie, if you build it, they will come. If you look for it, you'll find the problem. So it's really, really caused a spike in system repairs across the board. This is just some of the areas that we've been in this year, major areas. My video is not working. All right. just a screen capture. It was supposed to be a video, but it's not working for whatever reason. But that's a protruding lateral. You can see that the sewage is slightly green. We're doing a dye test to confirm a broken pipe from a sinkhole up above. So above ground, there was only a sinkhole. That was the only indication of a problem. We'll use a TV camera to actually put in the line. We'll put dye into the sinkhole and look for where it comes out. So most of these, all of these areas here, you know, some type of problem, you know, triggered a TV investigation and then some type of action to correct it so it wouldn't happen again, whether it be from grease or collapse or tree roots. And now we're up to the fog segment.
Hindsight's always 20. We should put the fog program first because there's a lot of questions asked and a lot of that will be addressed with these next slides. As you can see, there's a picture at the top of a clean sewer, free of grease, and there's one right below it with a big grease buildup. Sticks to the side of it, eventually clogs it up. FOG stands for fats, oils, and grease. Discharged into the county sewer system by both residential and commercial customers, causes blockage of sewer lines. Fog management is an integral part of the CMOM program. The program enhancement funding, that's basically the $250,000 a year that you approved in September of 2008, that enhancement funding has been pretty effective because our SSOs in our collection systems are dropping, just like the regulators wanted. One of the things we're doing with that additional funds is that we're beefing up our CFE inspections, our commercial food establishment inspections, the restaurants. We're doing 1,100 facilities a year. It's approximately half of our inventory. And the $60,000 from that $250,000 is dedicated towards that component of the program. We're also doing public outreach. I live in the city of Wilmington. I don't get the county channel, but I guess there's an individual called Perry the Pipe on there, and it's both there and on NDC, the county website. We fund our handouts out of this, the $25,000 taken from the program enhancements. It's all due to public outreach. We're working on some other initiatives to make the public aware of what's going on with grease and how to keep it from clogging our system, things that they can do on their end. As far as the overall grease abatement effort is going, we've expanded our effort from 37 sites to 78 sites, plus 19 pump stations. So what we're doing is there's 78 hot spots right now where grease is a problem. It could be a cluster of restaurants or it could be a cluster of apartments. We take a manhole at a strategic location and periodically dump bacteria in. The bacteria, it's a green method to, it consumes the grease and we battle it that way. We also attack it with a chemical emulsifier applied in other problem locations. This emulsifier is applied directly to the pipes with our sewer jet equipment. We do it by contractor and we do it with our in-house personnel. The bacteria enhancement program is costing us $65,000. We're dedicating to that per year. And $100,000 is dedicated to chemical treatment of the sewer mains. So bacteria drops in the pump stations and the manholes, that's running about $65,000 a year. And the chemical application to the sewer pipes itself is generally costing us $100,000. You can see there's another picture of grease on the walls of the sewer pipe. And I'll let Regis Hirsich talk about our corrosion control program.
Well, we're coming down the stretch here. And, I
Councilman Tackett, is that for Tony?
I was just going to ask Tony. When you were talking about these pictures you had up here and the bacteria you were kind of tracing, I mean, the first thing kind of looked at it, I mean, it almost looks like the Crystal Caves. We probably ought to charge and give tours of that stuff. But is there any, like, federal funding that you can get? You know, a lot of times there's funding for bacteria and polluted sites and stuff. Is there anything going on that they might be looking to help us, like in areas for bacteria, help clean out something like that?
The only thing the federal government is doing right now is threatening the fines. Unfortunately.
Should make Coons mad.
Anyway, the final aspect is the corrosion control program. And this is strictly a preventative measure, unlike the other programs, which were more or less addressing acute problems that have kind of a cause and effect, can show a cause and effect, an improvement. The corrosion control program is really a preventative measure and an asset preservation. It's meant to eliminate greatly reduce the formation of hydrogen sulfide, which then becomes very corrosive in the sewer line or force main. Also, it's a pretty good source of odor. The hydrogen sulfide is the rotten egg kind of smell, if you get it. We're using a bacteria enzyme bioactivator, kind of proprietary solution, contractually with a bidder on a RFP we put out in 2008. And we've been very successful with this product. That picture is not anything from the county. That's just a typical example of the corrosion just kind of eats away the plate until there's virtually nothing left. The area of concern is primarily the CRFM. To preserve that asset, it's a 10-mile force main, our primary force main carry flow into the city of Wilmington into the treatment plant. And then after that is everything else. So we need to preserve that CRFM life as long as possible. So we're treating with this bacteria enzyme throughout our system in both the CRFM and the Brandy 100 and the Northern Brandy 1 systems. So we're treating the vast majority of our system north of the canal. We dose at 30 locations or more. One of the advantages of the system we use is it's very, very mobile and very flexible. We can move from one site to another in a matter of a day or two. We can add a site or eliminate a site. We started in June 2009. The hydrogen sulfide, our success or failure is basically measured, by monitoring continuously for hydrogen sulfide. And at the end of the CRFM, just before the city of Wilmington, unfortunately, we're not able to get into the treatment plant to measure at the outfall of our force main, but there's an air stack right in front of the landfill, right? You see it up at 495, we measure there, and we're typically less than 2 parts per million, which is fairly low for hydrogen sulfide. In the system itself, where we're feeding out in our system, we're getting, less than 1, and we're getting a lot of times non-detect levels of hydrogen sulfide.
Go ahead, Councilman Street, and then Bell.
You said you couldn't get into the city Wilmington treatment plant. Why?
Well, we've asked many times to get in there to monitor, and we've been refused every time.
And we're spending how much money with the city?
$20 million. 16 million? $20 million.
So for $20 million, we can't get in. Oh, see, if we don't do something about that, then we're not doing what we're supposed to do. Between us and the administration, that has to be stopped. And if we're not getting in, I bet a nickel to a donut, we're not getting in for a reason, which is all the more reason to find a way to get in expeditiously.
To echo on Councilor Street's, what will we have? Have we sent letters? I mean, I'm sure you've asked, okay? That's the question. I guess, do you need council to intervene with you? I mean, we're all working together. I mean, is we stepping out of line by asking to have a letter written? I don't know how to go about it, to be quite honest. John, do you have a
Do they cite a reason why they're not allowing us on the property to do this?
I mean, I know we're dancing, I'm sure, because we're political, but...
Wayne Merritt, acting special services senior manager, general manager now. There have been long discussions, arbitrations, everything, pre-litigation, to try to get more information from the city. That's probably all I can say.
Is there something from council that we could do, or would you rather have a meeting about it?
Let me get together with our legal counsel to find out.
Okay.
If council...
Because I think Councilman Street, who takes care of the half of this, you know, the district, is the least half of the city, if not more, correct me, you know, has a vital interest. I know if it was Pike Creek and Three Little Bakers, I mean, that was me.
You mean Three Little Bakers?
And Three Little Bakers, whatever. But I would have been up on, I know where he's coming from, is what I'm trying to say.
But I can give you 20 million reasons why we should be in there with regularity.
Right.
And no disagreeing from your side. I mean, I'm trying to be not as outspoken when I'm running a meeting as you are, but I understand it fully. And we'll listen back to our general manager. He'll come back to us with some type of an answer.
We appreciate your support.
It's Councilman Bell and then Councilman Cartier next.
Good minds think alike. I think it's totally unacceptable. But I guess the question I'd ask is that could we get a better reading, either from where we're taking it or from within?
We get an acceptable reading from where we're at, and it tells us what we're contributing, what our flow is contributing, solely our flow. We would like to have a reading at the treatment plant so that we can get a confirmation of what's happening at the plant, because it tends to be an us them thing on everything. You know, they say it's, you know, we're sending them sewage, it smells, it's got hydrogen sulfide, we're the problem. We say, you know, we're, you know, it's your sewage also that's gonna be the problem, and we can't come to a solution, and thus unless we can monitor kind of both reasons.
Mr. Chairman, he answered our question. Is that they would feel much better if they could get a reading from inside. And with that being said, I think that not just from special services, but I think administration and council, you know, we got a dog in this fight. And I don't know how they can just arbitrarily say that we're not going to allow you in there when we pay the dollars that we pay. It's unacceptable.
I think between and now and the near future, we have to come up with a strategy amongst council and the administration to be able to solve this problem. Councilman Cartier?
And to further complicate the picture, you know, the city uses a vendor to manage the plant, so, and also make capital improvements. Mm-hmm. So I don't know to what extent they're part of the issue as well. So, you know, I look forward to, you know, some response from our legal folks about, you know, what our options are. You know, typically when landlords and tenants get in disputes, tenants can escrow money until the dispute is, you know, resolved, you know.
And I'm sure they'll take that into consideration, especially when they actually have a new contractor in there. One has been dismissed last week.
Really?
Yeah, Honeywell's taken over. Councilor Retta, I'm sorry, I lost track of the question. A
couple things. One, when you said you monitor, the county monitors, do they monitor prior to, on our end, before it goes into the city?
We monitor probably at 14 or 15 spots.
Prior to it going in?
The way the system works is it feeds the bacteria and enzyme way out into the fingers of the system, and then it activates as it's going along. It needs time for it to work, and so we monitor various spots throughout the system.
Our
system, right. And then we have a final monitor right in front of the treatment plant that's not on their grounds.
It's on our grounds.
It's on our ground. It's right in front of the landfill there. It's on our easement.
So what's a big dispute?
Well, the dispute is we'd like to have a, they're still getting hydrogen sulfide at the treatment plant, and we would like to monitor to know what they're getting and be able to react to it. I mean, we're saying it's not us, but they don't believe us.
Right. I mean, what's the dispute on their end? I mean, we're monitoring. Don't they get that results right there before it goes into the plant?
We sent it to them, yes.
It sounds like they just want to grab money. The other is, how much does it cost to build a plant? Middletown did it about 5 years ago for about $20
million. This plant has to, Clarence County Special Services, this plant has to handle a lot more than that. I think you're looking at $100 million in that range.
That's 5 years of paying the city, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the way I do math anyway. I don't know. So 6 years will we make the money? Okay.
Mr. Mayor, any more? Have you had your hand up? No. You're fine? Okay. All right, anybody else? Go ahead.
Sure, thank you. This last slide just shows the spending over the years since the inception of the program. FY09 was, it's a lot of the programs started mid-year, and that year, that's why the spending was low. But you can see it's pretty, stayed pretty much steady up through FY13.
Okay. The bottom column, FY2013, you'll be approached as part of the budget process, and most of that money will be couched in the contractual service lines and special services. But that, those are the numbers that were part of this year's budget. And we do have one more slide. It's not linked to this presentation, but we were asked to do a summary on our manhole rehabilitation efforts. I just put a chart together this morning. As you can see, in 2004, we had 39,520 manholes. Presently, at the beginning of calendar year 2011, we have 42,890. That's beginning of last year. Last January. The total manholes that have been rehabilitated between January 1, 2004 and January 1, 2011 is 2,678. Total number of manholes inspected hasn't been compiled yet because we don't have 2011's data in, but it's going to be at least 8,200 because that's what the other numbers total. And not shown on here is we've, since 2004, we have used approximately 2,300 manhole frames and covers have been replaced throughout the county. So even though the manholes weren't rehabilitated, their tops were replaced with tops that allow less stormwater to infiltrate, and we renew the system in that sense.
All right, thank you. Any more questions? The only thing I have to say is, I think in 2005, the councilman asked if we could buy the place, and it was not entertained. I don't want to say I told you so, but it was held against me. It was one of my revenue enhancement things that I put on. So, Mr. Street?
Well, I wanted to say is I have not attended these meetings with the regularity that I should have been attending. The more I'm here, the more I learn, the more respect and appreciation I have for what you do and what you go through. And I'm just astounded that we're spending that kind of money and somebody says, you can't come in. So, but thank you for everything you do, and I'll have to do better and learn more because I've learned a lot today.
And I think after this meeting, I think you do have council. You have, I'm not going around the table, but I think you have council. You have enough council.
If you go by head nod.
Yeah, we're going. I think if you need us, please use us. We really do. I mean, if you have a special meeting that you want to call with the county exec involved, of course, the appropriate council people or all of us who want to attend, I think we'll be there. I mean, this is a lot of money, like you said, you know, and we have no control. We have control with the rates to a degree, but we go back and forth in court, what, every 2 years or so. And like I said, they're getting ready to do a lot of stuff there, which isn't a good thing. But in the meantime, we, you know, we should have some say in this, what goes on. So, Councilman Street.
I mean, the sad part is for me is, you know, we all but went to war downstairs over $200,000 for kids. And we're fighting and scraping for that kind of money. And then there's this attitude with respect to about $20 million. It's just totally irrational.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick and Councilman Cartier.
What portion of their budget does $20 million cover?
Anybody can answer when you...
I would estimate it's probably 87%, 87 figures.
Correct.
We pay 87% of their budget.
Their operation.
For the operation of the...
And we can't come in.
This is getting worse and worse here. Well, Councilman Cartier, what can you say after that comment, right?
It is.
I think folks know where I stand on the relationship with the city of Wilmington and the sewer plant, and it's a real sore point. I just want to go and reflect for myself personally, representing the 8th District. When I was elected in 2004, I had no idea that we were facing the magnitude of the sewer infrastructure problem that we have faced. And I just want to tell you that my communities deeply appreciate council stepping up like we have, aggressively approving the monies to rehab the system. Because not only have we avoided, you know, all the regulatory problems that a lot of jurisdictions are in, and a lot of credit goes to our engineering staff here in special services, but, you know, a lot of situations got resolved that were really not good in terms of public health, and, you know, not to get too gross or anything, but a lot of raw sewage in creeks in communities, a lot in my district, okay? And, you know, we've resolved a lot of those issues. You know, I go to these meetings, people go, well, how do you know? How do you know this is all working and so forth? Well, you know, not only we have scientific data, but we know the water quality in the local streams is a lot better. So a lot of credit around the table, the administration, special services, council. We really grabbed the bull by the horns and we really did the right thing. And I got to tell you, since I've been here, you know, not knowing even this issue coming into office, it's been a really huge thing that we've tackled. And we're continuing to make strides, learn more, do more. And it's a major obligation of this government to protect the health of our citizens with an integrated, fully functioning sanitary sewer system. But the final thing I want to say is it's also an investment for the future, because when it comes to economic growth, it's a fundamental factor, having sewer capacity for economic growth. So I look, with all the troubles we are having with the economy and so forth, we are really preparing this county for future economic growth, for employment for our citizens. And it's been a great, you know, effort, a collective effort, council, administration, the department. And I don't think it really gets enough attention. We hear a lot of negative things in the media occasionally about, but this was a really great commitment, and we met our obligations, and we'll continue to do so. So I really thank everybody around the table for, you know, stepping up. A lot of you have been here through the whole thing and really being part of, you know, this, you know, great project that we're undertaking.
I'm sure. I know they appreciate it. And on a fiscal level, if we're not the lowest, we're one of the lowest rates. I know for a fact in the entire state, if not the lowest. I know subdivisions have their own down in Sussex County and so forth, but I can almost guarantee you we got one of the lowest rates, and that doesn't get publicized at all with all the work we do. So, and I think we got to do this at Civic Meetings. You're right. I don't talk about it enough. We have to. Mr. Bell, and then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The information the managerial team provides is excellent. I think it educates all of us so we can better educate our constituents and everything. But I think the other thing that, you folks do a tremendous job in leading, but I think that from the council standpoint, it should be taken back loud and clear to your field personnel, to the folks that are out there in all kinds of weather and all kind of conditions, deal with environmental friendly, but some hazardous materials, equipment that is very specialized to work and can cause serious injuries if it's not adhered to. So I think a great debt of respect and comments you get back to our personnel in the field to let them know that we appreciate what they do. We talk a lot about public safety, libraries, different things that touch people. This is one of the most important things that we provide in county government, and a lot of times we don't look at it the same way. But I think your folks out in the field deserve a tremendous, tremendous amount of credit.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick?
I think to add to that, if the people around this table did not read, it was the night before Christmas, that was sent out by Special Services, a release on the 21 people that spent Christmas Eve and into Christmas morning fixing the sewer for one development. I think everyone needs to read that and understand how we work in this county. And my question would be, if we were to build another plant, how much land would we need?
Well, Wayne Merritt, Special Services. I'm not sure about the land, but the bigger hurdle would be dealing with EPA and getting access to the water.
So Wilmington essentially has us hostage?
We won't. One wouldn't know until one tries to get the permit. But I imagine it'd be a pretty steep mountain to climb.
Well, how old is Wilmington?
Well, the plant was initially constructed in 1955, but over the years, renovated it. The last major renovation, I would say, would have been
10 years.
Longer than that. I would say about 20 years ago, late 80s, early 90s. Just before they privatized.
I think. No problem. Can we get this on electric electronics so we can hand it out? Yes. So. Anything else around the table?
Deb,
sorry, Kovac.
Starts with a K.
Let's see. Either way. On this $20 million that we pay them, do we have any idea of looking through their financial reports how much they're claiming that it takes to operate this station a year? I mean, is this, $20 million, are they saying that it takes $25 million to run it, or are they saying it, according to their books, it takes 15 and, they're making a $5 million profit? I mean, do we have any idea about, is this charging us what they're reporting that it actually takes to run, or are they making a healthy profit on us, or don't we know?
We American Special Services. They send us the bills, and our people, our financial people, question the bills, and usually it gets worked out after a back and forth process.
Are they supposed to be operating in a non-profit capacity? I mean, that's kind of my bigger question.
Well, they don't have a profit line on their forms, I'll put it that way. It's the best answer I can give.
Gotcha. No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Councilor Cartier?
Yeah, but they definitely have a vendor that's interested in making money on the project.
Right. Yeah.
It does the day-to-day operation and all that.
No other further comment on that one from here. Mr. Cartier?
I mean, one more thing. I mean, are they arguably, a utility service? I mean, if there's more than one way to negotiate with them. Not only could we make our own station, but, we could...
Not if they're like water.
We could threaten to have them regulated as a utility if they don't, just
throwing that out from there. The side, or you just want to let it go? Well,
there's a new administration coming next year. That's all I'll say.
Councilman Street did have his hands up, and then Council.
I'm just going to quote you. We're a utility as long as I say we're a utility. That's what came from up there. And second, he's absolutely correct. And anybody thinks they don't have a stake in the upcoming election regarding the next mayor of the city of Wilmington, yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick?
I don't know that if I'm correct on the second part of this, but the city water is not a utility. It's not under Public Service Commission. So my assumption would be that city sewer, if it's run by the city, also has no oversight.
That's what I would think.
That's what I'm thinking.
And so that's why folks in my area who don't live in the city end up with a $7,000 water bill and, oh, well, until the press gets on it, you know, you deal with it. All this is part and parcel of what's wrong in government.
Duly noted on the record. Anybody else from council? Anybody from the public? Anything to say? Around the room on that side? No? Well, thank you very much. It was as a topic that you wouldn't think would be, it's probably the hardest topic. I know Karen Vineski is one of the reasons why I ran. Is she said it wasn't glorious, but it's an everyday thing. Everybody's got to turn a light switch on, and everybody has to flush the toilet. And when one of them doesn't work, they come to county government to get it fixed. So, good topic. There's no further business. Anything under other?
Motion.
Second. Motion for adjournment. There's a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you very much for attending.